Top officials in the United States government have referred to China as the greatest threat to U.S. national security, by which they really mean U.S. dominance in the world. And it is now widely acknowledged in Washington that the U.S. is in a new Cold War with China. And given how dangerous it would be for this to escalate into a conventional military war, given that both countries have lots of nuclear weapons, instead, the U.S. is largely waging an unconventional war against China, and it is using information warfare through media propaganda. It is waging cyber warfare in the form of hacks and spying. And today I'm going to be focusing on how the U.S. is waging economic warfare. And a key part of that U.S. economic war is a technology war against high-tech sectors inside China. We saw the latest example of this April, when the U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen visited China, and the U.S. government used the media to spread this discourse claiming that China has this massive problem of overcapacity, that China produces too much technology, and therefore the U.S. and other Western governments have to take action against China in order to save their economies from Chinese overcapacity. When Janet Yellen met with top Chinese officials, she claimed that the U.S. government only wants a level playing field for U.S. workers and U.S. companies, claiming that supposedly China is not competing fairly because the Chinese government, which of course is socialist still, provides a lot of support for technological research, infrastructure development. It includes subsidies and tax breaks and other incentives to help encourage technological production. And the argument by the U.S. government is that this is completely unfair. China is not competing fairly, and the U.S. and Western governments have to take action against China. And of course, the implication is impose tariffs on Chinese goods and restrictions on China and sanctions and prevent exports of technologies in order to maintain more competitiveness, supposedly because China is not competing fairly. That's the U.S. government narrative. And it could not be more hypocritical and self-serving, because while Washington is claiming this, while the media is simply repeating these talking points coming from Yellen and other top officials, meanwhile, the U.S. government is giving out trillions of dollars of incentives to its own local industries in order to compete with China. So the U.S. is accusing China of exactly what it itself is doing. And today I'll be looking at some of the policies of the U.S. government, including the effects of the Inflation Reduction Act and Washington's return to industrial policy and significant state support for companies in the tech sector, again, which is exactly what the U.S. criticizes China for doing. So we can clearly see here, once again, the hypocrisy of the U.S. government, which lectures China and other countries around the world and tells them to do the exact opposite of what it does. And in addition to being blatantly hypocritical, it's also very ironic hearing Janet Yellen lecture other countries and what they should do, given that she herself does not have a very good track record. Yellen was, before becoming Biden's current Secretary of the Treasury, she was previously the chair of the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Central Bank. And back in 2017, she infamously claimed that she expected no new financial crisis in our lifetimes. She claimed that the U.S. government had solved all of the problems that were unleashed in the 2008 financial crash that nearly destroyed the economy, that new regulations had made sure that there would be no future financial crises, according to Janet Yellen. And then just a few years later, 2023 was the worst ever year for bank failures in the United States. Three of the four largest bank failures in U.S. history happened in this year, just a few years after Janet Yellen claimed that there would be no more financial crises in our lifetimes. And this is not even to mention the fact that there is currently a major crisis going on this year, 2024, in the commercial real estate sector in the United States. And many mainstream financial analysts and media outlets have warned this could unleash yet another major financial meltdown. So the point is that it's crazy for US officials who have such a bad track record to try to lecture other countries about how they should govern their economy, how they should develop their technological sector. And it's even more cynical when you realize what Washington's ulterior motives are with this claim of Chinese overcapacity. We saw this very clearly back in 2021, in which Janet Yellen's colleague in the Biden administration, the U.S. Commerce Secretary Gina Raimondo, she let the cat out of the bag and she admitted what Washington's real goal is. Gina Raimondo said that the U.S. wants to, quote, slow down China's rate of innovation. I really need to emphasize this point. The U.S. said very clearly that it is working with Europe, its Western allies, in order to prevent China from technologically developing. And of course, the real goal at the end of the day is the U.S. does not want any competition to its big tech monopolies in Silicon Valley. By the way, all of those big tech monopolies in Silicon Valley, pretty much all of them, the vast majority, have received billions of dollars of support from the U.S. government. Tesla, Google, Meta, they have long enjoyed direct support from the U.S. government, which again is what the U.S. is accusing China of. And by the way, this was not the only time that Gina Raimondo made these very aggressive comments about China. This March, the U.S. Commerce Secretary admitted in a press conference that Washington will, quote, do whatever it takes in order to prevent China from getting access to the most advanced technologies. Do whatever it takes. That includes a lot of things. That includes economic war, sabotage, sanctions, export restrictions, and who knows what the U.S. is doing covertly. But the point is that the stated U.S. policy toward China is technological war and economic war. Washington's goal is to prevent China from technologically developing in advanced sectors and competing with U.S. big tech monopolies. And the narrative about Chinese overcapacity that we hear from Janet Yellen and others is simply part of this larger strategy of economic war and tech war aimed at China. And it's quite cynical. Because at the end of the day, this whole narrative from U.S. government officials using the media, all of this is aimed at justifying aggression against China in the form of sanctions, export restrictions, banning companies and exports in the West, and tariffs. And we've seen this very clearly because the billionaire oligarch Elon Musk, who has received many billions of dollars of support from the US government, he said very clearly back in January that Tesla needs restrictions on Chinese EV exports. And Elon Musk complained that if the US government does not put tariffs on Chinese EVs, then they will demolish Tesla and other competitors. So this is all about protecting these US monopolies like Tesla, which, by the way, Tesla has received billions of dollars of support from the US government in subsidies and tax breaks and other forms of industrial policy. And Washington has not been hiding this strategy very well, because just a few weeks after Elon Musk called for the U.S. government to put tariffs on Chinese EVs, the Biden White House published a fact sheet in which they claimed, quote, Chinese automakers are seeking to flood the autos market in the United States and globally, posing new threats to our national security. And they claimed that there is a national security risk posed by connected vehicles from countries of concern, including the People's Republic of China. So Biden is claiming that cheap Chinese EVs that compete much more effectively than expensive Tesla EVs, they are a national security threat, and the White House called for an investigation into these EVs, and very likely the US will impose tariffs on Chinese EVs to help make them less competitive, protecting US monopolies like Tesla. In fact, last year, BYD, the Chinese automaker, overtook Tesla as the number one seller of electric vehicles on Earth. And Tesla-focused websites are very concerned, like the website Teslarati, which has an entire section of the website dedicated to Elon Musk. They publish an article warning that China's BYD has an electric vehicle that sells for around $10,000, and they noted that this is scaring the U.S. auto industry. So oligarchs like Elon Musk, they simply cannot compete with China, which is why they're begging the U.S. government to put trade barriers to protect them. And Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, is claiming that this is because of Chinese overcapacity. Those are their cynical talking points. But we have to ask, why was the U.S. never concerned about so-called Chinese overcapacity when China was dominating global production of low-value-added, low-tech industries like toasters and refrigerators and furniture and clothing? Because the U.S. didn't care then, because the U.S. simply does not want China to be competing in high-tech sectors. When the U.S. normalized political relations with China in the 1970s, and later when the U.S. began allowing investments with the reforms in China that began in 1978 under the leader Deng Xiaoping, and then later when the U.S. government allowed China to join the World Trade Organization in 2001, the U.S. strategy was always to keep China subordinated under the U.S., and they simply wanted China to produce low-value-added, labor-intensive products, and the U.S. wanted to monopolize high-value-added, high-tech industries. So China would produce clothes and toys and household appliances, and the U.S. would produce all of the advanced electronics. But throughout decades of Chinese industrial policy and state planning, moving up the global value chain, China now can compete with U.S. monopolies, big tech monopolies, in the most important cutting-edge technological sectors. And this is what is concerning the U.S. so much. It does not actually want competition. U.S. politicians claim that they want fair competition with China. They don't want competition. This is why the U.S. banned the export of advanced semiconductors to China. And it's also why Washington is targeting the artificial intelligence and quantum computing sectors in China. These are the areas where the U.S. government has imposed bans on foreign investment by U.S. investors, export restrictions, sanctions, blacklisting of Chinese companies in these most important cutting-edge technological sectors: artificial intelligence, quantum computing, semiconductors. These industries are the future of the world economy. And let's not forget that back in 2018, the U.S. pressured Canada to arrest and basically kidnap the chief financial officer of Huawei, one of the leading technology companies in China. And its CFO, Meng Wanzhou, was put under house arrest for years in Canada on completely bogus charges of violating the illegal unilateral sanctions that the U.S. put on Iran, which violate international law. And yet the U.S. was trying to extradite this top Chinese executive, who, by the way, Meng Wanzhou is the daughter of the founder and CEO of Huawei, one of the most important Chinese tech companies. So this was a clear example of the very aggressive, desperate tech war that the U.S. is waging against China. And then, of course, the U.S. pressured other countries to ban the use of Huawei 5G equipment, and the loyal U.S. allies in Europe complied. They banned the use of Huawei 5G technology, and now, by the way, many of them are behind in internet. Like the U.K. banned 5G technology from Huawei, and now the U.K. has the worst 5G connections, the slowest connections in all of Europe. So they are suffering, but a small handful of U.S. big tech monopolies are benefiting. So there are so many examples here of Western hypocrisy and the accusation from the U.S. government that China is unfairly competing because it's a socialist system that provides significant state support to develop industry It's so hypocritical because the irony is that the US, while preaching free markets, has also constantly provided state support for its own tech companies. In fact, the renowned Harvard economist Danny Rodrick published an academic research paper in 2023 with two other co-authors, and they studied the industrial policy of governments around the world. That is, state interventionist policies that provide support to develop industry and promote production in the country. And they found that the region of the world that had the most industrial policy interventions in the economy, policies of state support for local industry, was the West. Western Europe and the OECD countries, the wealthy developed countries concentrated in the West. And in fact, their research shows that the richer a country is, the more developed it is, the more likely that country is to use industrial policy. That is, the so-called free market is not effective at helping a country industrialize and develop. Instead, the free market encourages investors to look for rent-seeking and engage in speculation, not in productive investment, because rent-seeking and speculation are the ways that they will get the largest profits on their investment. And although I think this research is very important, largely because it was co-authored by a Harvard economist who's very mainstream, at the same time, we've known this for many decades. It's not new. Many heterodox economists have been pointing this out for decades. In particular, I often quote the work of the South Korean development economist Ha Jun Chang, has shown for decades, going back to 2002 in his groundbreaking book, Kicking Away the Ladder. He showed how all of the rich advanced economies in the world developed through significant protectionist policies in which the state provided subsidies and tax breaks and other support, and also imposed tariffs and other protections to develop local infant industry. And this is exactly what the United States did. In fact, the US was one of the most protectionist countries on earth, with average tariffs of 40 to 50% up until the end of World War II. And it was only after World War II, when the US established its economic dominance in the world, that the US finally began to preach so-called free trade, which is also what the British Empire did. The UK also was one of the most protectionist countries on earth up until the mid-19th century, when it repealed some of the protectionist policies like the Corn Laws. And then the British Empire started to preach so-called free trade, but that was because free trade benefited the British Empire after it established its economic hegemony, just like so-called free trade benefited the US Empire after it established its economic hegemony after World War II. The major hegemonic economic powers only preach free trade when it benefits them, and when it no longer benefits them, they return to protectionism, which is exactly what the US government is doing today. Janet Yellen and other top US officials are accusing China of overcapacity and claiming that it's unfairly competing, and instead, China needs to rely more on the free market. Well, at the exact same time, Janet Yellen and the US government are overseeing trillions of dollars of support for their own local industry. I mean, it is really incredible how blatantly hypocritical this is. Goldman Sachs economists published a report back in 2023 that looked at the effects of the Inflation Reduction Act, which was passed by the Biden administration. And this legislation will give trillions of dollars of incentives to companies in the US to invest in renewable energy to help create a more green economy. Now, this is exactly what China has been doing to encourage a transition away from fossil fuels. When China does it, the US claims that it's evil socialism, but now the US is doing it as well. And according to these Goldman Sachs economists, they predicted that the Inflation Reduction Act will result in $1.2 trillion, with the TR, $1.2 trillion of government incentives by 2032 in order to invest in clean energy, technology, and new infrastructure. And they estimated that it will encourage $11 trillion of total infrastructure investments by 2050, including $3 trillion of investments by 2032, an average of $290 billion annually. And it's not just the Inflation Reduction Act. Another signature piece of legislation passed by the Biden administration is the CHIPS Act, which the U.S. government passed in order to subsidize local production of chips, semiconductors, in the U.S., which is also part of the tech war against China, because the Biden administration did this while prohibiting the export of advanced semiconductors to China. This is being referred to as a chip war. And the CHIPS Act also provides tens and hundreds of billions of dollars of support for developing the semiconductor industry in the U.S. And Bloomberg has reported that the Taiwanese Semiconductor Manufacturing Corporation, TSMC, has been offered $11.6 billion of U.S. government grants and loans in order to build chip plants in Arizona. And in addition to that, the U.S. government is also offering $6.6 billion of subsidies for the South Korean company Samsung to build a chip factory in Texas, several chip factories in Texas. So once again, we see that the U.S. criticizes China for engaging in industrial policy and providing government support for its tech companies, but the U.S. government is providing trillions of dollars of subsidies and tax breaks and other incentives for companies to develop industry and build factories in the U.S. So when China does it, it's bad, according to Washington, but the U.S. can do it and then hypocritically lecture other countries about the free market and ending state support, which is supposedly unfair and leads to so-called overcapacity. Now, the fact that the U.S. government is spending so much money on industrial policy is an implicit acknowledgement that the real problem is not Chinese so-called overcapacity, but in reality, U.S. undercapacity. The problem is that the U.S. has completely destroyed its industrial base as it has deindustrialized in recent decades. Ever since the rise of neoliberal economics, of free market fundamentalism in the late 1970s and early 1980s with Ronald Reagan in the US and Margaret Thatcher in the UK, this free market fundamentalist neoliberal ideology claimed that all forms of economic growth are equally valid. And what happened is the US economy was increasingly financialized. And you had more and more financial speculation and not actual tangible material production. And meanwhile, production was outsourced across the world in global South countries where labor was paid much lower and U.S. corporations could profit from exploiting this low-paid labor. This eroded U.S. manufacturing. It destroyed entire regions of the U.S. like the Rust Belt, you know, Detroit, Michigan, Cleveland, Ohio, these cities that had been major industrial hubs. They were deindustrialized. It was also a way for companies in the U.S. to break the back of unions and attack the power of organized labor. And now here we are in the 2020s, and the U.S. manufacturing base is so weak, and there is a shortage of skilled labor because people for decades have not had good manufacturing jobs. And because of the financialization of the economy and the asset price inflation, the big bubbles in the real estate sector, in the stock market, in the bond market, what we've seen is that the cost of living has become prohibitively expensive, which means that manufacturing is too expensive in the U.S. to be internationally competitive. So the only way that the U.S. can actually compete, that its industries can compete with Chinese industries, is through massive government support subsidizing the costs of production. So all of this at the end of the day shows that the problem is not Chinese overcapacity. The problem is U.S. undercapacity, and yet Washington is scapegoating China for all of these problems that were created by its own neoliberal market fundamentalist policies and by the greed of US-based multinational corporations that wanted to maximize their profits by going around the world and destroying the industrial base in the US and breaking the backs of unions. This is the crucial point that is almost never mentioned in this US government-fed, media-manufactured scandal about so-called Chinese overcapacity. And by the way, on the subject of so-called Chinese overcapacity, I want to point out a few important details that are being overlooked. Now, BYD, the top Chinese automaker, which overtook Tesla as the world's largest seller of electric vehicles, BYD is being demonized, and the US claims that China is flooding markets with cheap EVs, and supposedly this is unfair. But in reality, let's look at BYD's share of the EV market in Europe. If you actually look at the data, BYD only represents 1.5% of the share of the EV market in the European Union. 1.5%. Meanwhile, Korean car companies like Kia have 4.4% of market share in Europe. And Hyundai, another Korean car manufacturer, has 4.1%. And Toyota, a Japanese car manufacturer, has 2.8%. So the US is totally fine with Japanese and South Korean car manufacturers dominating the EV market in Europe. But instead, they condemn China, which is a tiny little fraction of the EV market. So again, the actual problem is not so-called overcapacity. The US does not want China to compete in these high-tech industries. The US will allow Japan and South Korea because they are essentially proxies of the US, they're client states, and the US has been militarily occupying South Korea and Japan for decades. There are still tens of thousands of US troops in both South Korea and Japan. So the US is not concerned about them, but the US does not want China to have market share. And let's look at some more data here, because this is the data that is so often ignored in the mainstream financial discussion from Western governments and the media of this so-called Chinese overcapacity. Now, China has become the world's largest producer of cars. That's true. China also has 1.4 billion people, which makes it four times larger than the US population. It has the world's largest market. And if you actually look at Chinese production of electric vehicles and plug-in hybrids, you can see that over 80% of Chinese new energy vehicles are purchased locally in the domestic market. In fact, less than 20% of China's EVs are exported abroad. That is fewer than 2 million Chinese EVs that are being exported. And meanwhile, China exports an additional roughly 3 million internal combustion engines, which is, you know, traditional gas-guzzling cars. So together, China is exporting about 5 million cars per year now, 2 million electric vehicles roughly, and 3 million ICEs roughly. You know how many cars Japan exported in 2023? 5.27 million. So why is Japan allowed to export 5 million cars every year, but China can't export the same number? Japan's population is 123 million people. China's population is 1.4 billion. That is, it's 10 times larger than Japan's population, and yet they both export the same number of cars every year. So why is Japan not being accused of overcapacity? The US claims that China is overcapacity, but this is ridiculous. If you actually look at per capita exports in terms of the size of the population, Japan is exporting 10 times more cars per capita than China is. And another clear example of this double standard is South Korea. South Korea has a population of 52 million people. China's population is 20 times larger than South Korea's population. And in 2023, South Korea exported 2.52 million automobiles. So that's to say that China is exporting two times as many automobiles as South Korea, despite the fact that China has 20 times the population of South Korea. So mathematically, if you look at per capita exports of cars, China is exporting 1/10 of the cars per capita that South Korea and Japan are individually exporting. So why are South Korea and Japan not being accused of overcapacity, but China is? Because the US does not want China to compete in these cutting-edge technological sectors. The US is fine with Japan and South Korea exporting these cars and other advanced technologies because they are US client regimes that are militarily occupied by the US. Their governments essentially do whatever the US tells them to do. Overcapacity is the excuse that the US is using to justify its economic war and tech war on China. And I'm certainly not the only one who recognizes this. There are a lot of mainstream financial analysts and scholars who are essentially coming to the same conclusion. And Kyle Chan is an academic at Princeton University who specializes in industrial policy. He studies the industrial policy of China and India. And he wrote a very good article about this, about the so-called overcapacity allegation that we hear from Western governments. And I think he put it very well. I'm going to read here from part of his article. And he says, "Why do countries have to produce as much as they consume? A lot of the arguments about China's overcapacity seem to assume that countries should be producing at or below their level of consumption. But why should this be the case? Saudi Arabia and Norway produce far more oil than they consume. Likewise with American natural gas. Taiwan single-handedly produces more than half of the world's semiconductor chips. The idea of exporting goods to other countries, goods that they want to buy voluntarily, is suddenly being talked about like it's borderline criminal behavior. Part of this is just a longer-standing gripe about China not consuming enough the way that the US does, for example. The great irony is that as Western countries urge China to become more like them, they're becoming more like China. That is, they're engaging in industrial policy and providing more state support." And I agree with this analysis here. I think he said it very well. And I would add, he talked about Saudi Arabia and Norway producing more oil than they consume, or Taiwan producing more semiconductor chips. Well, what about Japan and South Korea exporting 10 times more cars per capita than China exports? So here we see once again this blatant double standard. US allies are not accused of overcapacity, but China is. I think that says it all, frankly, and I don't need to keep repeating myself, so I'm going to conclude here. I'm Ben Norton. I'm the editor-in-chief of Geopolitical Economy Report. I want to thank everyone for joining me today, and please like and subscribe to help to promote this in the algorithm. I will be back soon for more analysis and reporting. Thanks everyone for joining me today. I will see you next time.